and welcome to the CWF Gamecast. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, and today is the second of our new episodes of the CWF Gamecast podcast. We had released a new episode recently, over on Saturday actually, announcing that we would be featuring as a guest on the Stone Ape podcast with Tom Barbalay. And that was recorded yesterday on Sunday, and I know Tom is working on the post-production on that to do the cutting and the editing and, you know, the sprucing up of it so that he can then release it. He does something really interesting in that he stores all of his content on the Internet Archive and links to it that way so that if he ever moves his websites or changes hosts or does any of that kind of stuff, that he can then always have a secure place that's readily available not only for himself, but also for other people to then go and access his content. Usually, I wouldn't start off with getting into some of the actual content like that so early in the podcast. I know traditionally, and I do have to apologize because it has been a very long time since I've done this, so I'm sure there will be some errors and some foibles, and I hope you bear with me, and I hope that I will continue to improve with each episode. But let me give you a brief overview of what this episode is hoping to address. I do want to announce that we will be returning to podcasting. I have managed to work it out with my schedule and find the time to be able to do this and to adopt a new format. I really like what Tom does with the Stone Ape podcast and with Biota.org and with Model Rail Railroad, which is a bit of a tongue twister, but he uses a conversational setup where he normally will have a co-host on the Stone Ape podcast, for example. He uses a gentleman by the name of Heron, who is a futurist linguist, and I know there are at least one, if not more, co-hosts on the Model Rail Railroad. Tom also routinely has guests on who he converses with, and he does for at least one podcast, I believe it's the Model Rail Railroad, he uses TalkShoe, and they do the podcast at a set time every other week. People can listen, they can then call in. The podcast is recorded and done on TalkShoe through the phone lines, I believe. And that way it gives listeners a chance to participate, to be active listeners, to be active participants. And you don't have to worry about operating in a vacuum. I think it's a great setup. I think the use of a conversational podcast allows people to have an experience where the host and ideally a co-host play off each other. They, like any good partnership, they take one person's weaknesses and build on it with another person's strengths and vice versa. I also think that having a conversational podcast set up allows for there to be less post-production. Traditionally, I had to do lots of post-production. I would spend double the amount of time that an episode took to listen to in order to do post-production, to edit out extra sounds, to smooth out the audio, to insert all sorts of content. In particular with the Enhanced podcast, which I do think is a wonderful way to podcast, it was very difficult to create those in a short span of time. I had to not only find the pictures and other images that I wanted to insert into those, but also the websites to link to. Doing all sorts of show notes and creating blog article posts to correspond with the podcast episode could also be very time-consuming. And coming up with a script, so to speak, was an issue in working out with the timing. How much time will I spend on, you know, housekeeping? How much time will I spend on releasing information on new games and sneak peeks and all that sort of stuff? Caused there to be a lot of post and pre-production, which I'm hoping to avoid or at least severely limit. So we will be coming up with a schedule, and as soon as I have that, I will be releasing the information, perhaps be doing a mini-cast like I had done to alert everyone to my guest appearance on the Stone Ape podcast. But also, once we have a traditional schedule set up, I will be, of course, working to adhere to that schedule, adhere to our release schedule for it. I'll perhaps be recording episodes in advance and then releasing them on the official release date. In the past, and if you're hearing that noise in the background, I do have to apologize. I got married in May, and recently my wife and I moved to new living quarters, and we have these two new bunnies. Right now I'm recording in what is my study / living room / dining room, which adjoins our kitchen, and we have our two bunnies living in the living room. One of them is the one you're listening to now. His name is Mal, and he's a very, very loud drinker when it comes to his water. He's actually an adorable black mini lop bunny. And our other one, her name is Sally. And as I say her name, she's stirring and looking at me. But she's another mini lop. She's white and with a little bit of black kind of spattered across, almost like a slab of marble. But anyway, I apologize for that tangent. I did just kind of want to explain why you're hearing some other background noise, and hopefully he will be stopping that so it won't be too distracting for you. It's kind of interesting. Last night, my wife and I were watching the premiere of The Walking Dead, which, being Halloween, of course, made sense. And I know I'm going off on a tangent here, and so early too, especially when I was going to be giving you an overview of where the podcast would be going in the days to come. But we were watching The Walking Dead, and it was getting to be a really scary part, very suspenseful. And right at that moment when, you know, something is about to happen and you're just waiting, you're waiting for the suspense to break and for the tension to fall apart and for the big reveal, don't we hear our bunny Mal, for all you geeks, named after Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly and Serenity, but don't we hear Mal drinking away on his bottle of water really loudly? We both break out into laughter, but anyway, I do digress. So as I was saying, there will be a regular schedule for the podcast, and when all the information is decided upon and everything's worked out, I will release that. But I have to give almost entirely the credit for this to Tom Barbalay. He has re-inspired me to get into podcasting again, to continue what we had done, to work on it, and to appreciate the medium in preparation for appearing on Stone Ape, which is actually an issue I wanted to talk about in this episode of the podcast. I had listened to a ton of the Stone Ape podcasts, a few of the Model Real Radio podcasts, and also attempted to listen to a couple of the Biota podcasts, and really became excited about how he handles his podcast and about the guests and the format and what it has done for him. And I, of course, listened to a few other podcasts. I had taken a break. If you listen to the episode of the Stone Ape when it comes out, you'll hear me mention that I had taken a hiatus from both podcasting and listening to podcasts, but that I started getting back into it as a result of the Tabletop Battlefield and with the Stone Ape podcast. But listening to them have reinvigorated me. It's helped me to really remember how much I enjoy doing it and desire to find the time, which I have found, to create them. I am most appreciative of chance to appear on Tom's podcast, and I'm really honored and deeply thrilled to hear that he has been a longtime fan of the blog, and in particular the podcast. I don't know if I am unique in this position, or if other podcasters and bloggers out there operate the same way, but it has felt for like for a very long time that I have been operating in a vacuum. I don't receive a lot of feedback. I don't hear a lot from any listeners that happen to be out there. I don't actually keep track of numbers of how many people download on iTunes or how many people are visiting the page where the podcasts are. I do keep track of numbers for the blog itself, for activity, because we are sponsored now by a wonderful online vendor, 12/7 Games, and I'd like to talk about them in a little bit. I keep track of that kind of stuff for them, and of course I will have to start keeping track of the podcast stats as applicable in order to share that with them. But by and large, I don't really keep track of all that kind of stuff, and I just kind of operate here, like I said, in a vacuum, and I don't really know what people are listening to, what they like, what they're not liking, or any kind of feedback. I really can't stress enough how much I desire your feedback, your positive comments, your constructive criticism, what you would like to hear more about, what you don't want to hear about. I would rather not spend time discussing things that you have no interest in. If I'm talking about Monster Apocalypse and you not only don't play it and don't care about it, I'd be better spending my time on something else. I want to make it productive and interesting for you. So, in light of that, I want to also announce that there are a lot of other changes coming. The first one is that the blog, the CWF Gamecast, which is located at wargamingforums.com, that's all one word, wargamingforums.com, it is going to be completely rebranded. I started branding it several months ago when I took the WordPress theme that I had been using, and I had for a long time used predominantly blue themes, but I had taken it and scaled things down and tried to minimize things. I tried to strip away all the extra stuff that wasn't necessary, and I went to a white background with only one sidebar. I tried to limit what is in the sidebar. I tried to limit what's in the footer. I'm using what I call the Apple aesthetic. But in addition to this, we are refocusing and rebranding. We're getting brand new logos made. We're getting signature logos made. We are now on Facebook. And as part of that, we're having a new Facebook logo made. All of this imagery is being created by a good friend of mine who also is a very interesting and incredible person in the realm of online experiences, I guess is the best way I can frame it. He is the project leader for the Battlestar Wiki, which is the wiki devoted to Battlestar Galactica, both the Reimagined series, the original series, the 1980 series, Caprica, anything Battlestar Galactica, he has his fingers in for the wiki. He's also the CEO of Frack Media Productions, which I am the PR coordinator of. And it's in his role as CEO of Frack Media that he is creating these graphics for me. I am not getting them for free. I am paying him. It's a paid job. As I said, I am the PR coordinator, but it is outside of that realm that his work is being done. And they do a lot of other really interesting stuff there. They do web design, they do web hosting, they do coding. The chief technical officer is a college friend of mine, a really good friend of mine. And right now, he works for Best Buy Corporation. He's just off a special project at their headquarters designing and coding websites, internal websites for their use across the company. And both him and Joe are very well skilled in coding and graphic design and all that kind of stuff. So Joe has created a wonderful header, and that will be coming out as soon as he's finished with the other images and I sign off and everything. The other part of all of this whole redesign is we are now refocusing what we will be discussing and what we are going to blog about. Right now we have moved away from just gaming in general and New England gaming to focus on four main areas. The first is we're going to continue to talk about all things New England gaming. We've done reviews of New England game stores. We've done reviews of online vendors. We go to events at some of the local game stores to me. I go and take pictures. I chronicle events. I've live blogged. I did that in particular with Battleground Games when they opened their second location in Plainville. That's at 25 Taunton Street in Plainville, for those who are interested. I went, I live blogged the first event when it opened. And I also live blogged the grand opening. And I had done that, I kept things up on Twitter, they run all sorts of events, and I will usually go and participate and update on Twitter and all sorts of different mediums to let people know what's going on. So we're going to continue to do that kind of stuff and hope to expand it. I would love to be able to go to every single game store in New England, every single gaming convention that happens in New England, every single major gaming-related venue, whether it's a store that sells product that may not be gaming, but that may be of use to gamers, or places that gamers like to hang out, like a favorite pub, or whatever, and to go and to review all of those. If you happen to own anything that fits that bill, I would love the chance to come and visit you and to see what your store or whatever your location happens to be, and to see it and to chat with you and to share what you do with it, the rest of the community. We also want to shy away from just talking about gaming in general. We want to focus more on historical gaming. We're not going to be getting into Napoleonics per se. We might do a passing overview, but it's not something that I am particularly knowledgeable about, and I feel it would be a disservice to you to address that where I don't know anything about it. Instead, there are two games that we will be focusing on in particular, but we will address other historical games as we see them. The first is War at Sea, which is the Axis and Allies Naval Managers game by Wizards of the Coast. We've been covering that ever since the game has come out. We have a wealth of information on the blog about the game. The other one is Flames of War, and we're very excited about this for a multitude of reasons. The most important one I can't share with you right now because it pertains to what I call on the blog a gigantic secret, and I had stated that that secret would only be revealed exclusively on the Stony podcast, and I don't want to say what the secret is until Tom gets that episode of the blog, of his podcast published. And as soon as that is, I'll happily say what this is and how it pertains to what we will be doing. But it's pretty exciting, and I think that between those two games and other historical games, we'll have a wealth of information to talk about and to share with you, and it'll just be really exciting. So I think that covers, well, I think that spends way too much time, honestly, but covers all the different housekeeping kind of stuff that I would like to address at this time. But there are a couple other things I just kind of want to cover with you. The first is something that had taken place a while ago, and it deals with Flames of War. A lot of the content in this particular cast deals with Flames of War, and if you're not a big Flames of War person, you might not find this episode as interesting, but hopefully you found our housekeeping stuff to be of interest to you, if only to know that we are back and we will be having a schedule shared and that we'll be doing things pretty regularly. So the first thing I want to share with you is something that had happened back in October, and it was very exciting. It was a massive Battle of Berlin game played using the Flames of War models and rule set. It was played at the Battleground Games and Hobbies at Plainville, and it was wonderful is what it was. It took place on a Sunday. It was many hours long, and it was interesting because there was a little bit of controversy in that one of the German players never showed up. So the German side was down one entire army, whereas the Allies had their full complement of players and outnumbered the Germans. In addition, it showed a weakness to me in the rule set for Flames of War, and that is, like most games, most tabletop games, it has difficulty when it comes to city fighting. The urban arena is very difficult to emulate on the tabletop, and there are a number of areas of urban combat that just don't translate, and even if they do, games don't typically address them and don't address them well in their rule set. I particularly noticed that with the Battle of Berlin, there would be times that combat would erupt and damage would be done, but perhaps the damage would be done or should be done to a building. But there are no system, no setup in the rules that would allow for a building to be destroyed or for debris to fall down and perhaps cause casualties or damage or inflict penalties on morale or anything like that. It could have been very interesting and very useful, especially in this setup, but that did not happen. You can find tons of pictures that I had taken. They are on our blog, and I don't want to make the podcast simply well, it's on the blog, so here's the web address, and you need to go to this web address and type in the URL and find what's going on. That's why I had done the enhanced podcast, and I'm not going to be doing that. But if you do want to see the pictures, you do have to go to the blog, because that's where they are. And I have taken, oh, what is it, 150 or so pictures that cover setup and some of the different turns. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to stay the entire time, but I feel the duration I was there captured the feel, the essence, and you can look at the pictures and see the wonderful paint jobs and just experience the battle. It was truly incredible. I know their next massive game will be the Battle of Kursk, I believe. So they're hoping to do a gigantic tank battle, and hopefully I'll be able to play in that. I have, what is it? Is it 2000? I think it's 2,000 points of a Panzer company that I'm working on. It's a mid-war Panzer company, oddly enough painted in early war scheme, and I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I know it's not historically accurate, and I am a politics and history major, so you would think that would bother me, and I guess it does. But the reason I did that is I am not only unskilled in assembling and painting miniatures, but I also strongly dislike that side of the game. I would much rather have them already assembled and already painted and just go play. That's the part that I'm interested in, the playing of the game and the recording of what happens. Not so much the putting the little people together and putting the tanks together and then painting them all up. But I had done the early wars paint scheme because I knew it's one that I could do, that it could be done easily, could be done quickly, and that it would actually happen. If I went for a mid-war or a late-war paint scheme, I knew that I wouldn't get it done. That I would maybe do one or two vehicles, maybe some infantry, and then they would just sit there. Right now, all my tanks are assembled and painted. Almost all of my vehicles are assembled and painted. I'm working on my infantry, but I'm waiting on my paints to come in for that. But anyway, I do digress. So hopefully I'll be ready to do a massive game of Kursk when that is ready. And if you're someone who lives in southeastern Massachusetts, I do strongly recommend coming when we play our games. We play every Wednesday, and we alternate between going to Battleground Games and Hobbies in Abington, which is located near the old South Weymouth Naval Air Base, and its new location, its second location, in Plainville. This Wednesday, we will be meeting at the Abington location to play some 600-point games of Flames of War. And we try to mix it up between Flames of War and War at Sea or other games. So hopefully you'll come and you'll check things out. Feel free to drop me a message, but send me an email. My email address is cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Or you can leave a comment on the blog, or on Facebook, or on Twitter, and I will read those, and I'm happy to pass you the information. The other thing I wanted to talk about is actually, it's a really good deal. It's not related to Flames of War at all. It deals with War at Sea. But this is a really good deal if you want to pick up the new War at Sea set, which is called Fleet Command, that releases on December 7th. And if you purchase it from 127 Games, who, as I had mentioned, is our sponsor, they will be giving you 25% off singles from the base set or Task Force, if you pre-order one or more cases of Fleet Command, and you can pre-order Fleet Command, and you can buy all sorts of other products by going to their website, and it's a nice website. It's a work in progress. The gentleman who owns the company, his name is Bill. He's fantastic. It has some of the best customer support I've ever seen. It is also the only online vendor to receive the CWF Gamecast Editor's Choice Award, and also the first company to receive our Editor's Choice Award. So I do highly recommend them, and you can go to their website at 12-7-games.com. The numbers are the numerals. They're not spelled out, so it's literally the number 12-7-games.com. And you can then go and place your pre-orders and all that kind of stuff. So you will get a good deal from Bill. He'll give you a wonderful setup. And if you spend $100 or more, I think it is, he gives you free shipping. And that's only if you live in the U.S. or are having it shipped to the U.S. If you're getting it shipped anywhere else, you know, outside of the U.S., if it's Canada or Mexico or Australia or wherever, I believe he gives you a $6 discount for every $100 that you order. I might be wrong about that. So you would want to double check on his website. Everything is listed there. And, well, that's that, actually. But briefly, I do want to just touch on, well, let's see, how am I doing for time? We're going to go a little long. I do just want to touch on one other thing pertaining to Flames of War, and that is there are a bunch of releases out right now, or that will be coming out soon, and I just want to kind of mention some of them. If you're not aware of what's going on with Flames of War, they've moved out of their mid and late war, and they're concentrating on the early war. So they have a lot of models and rule sets and, you know, other accessories that are designated early war to allow you to play early war games. And they have a few things that are coming out right now. One of the most interesting to me is something called Das Book. And you can find out more about this, of course, on their website. But if you're near a gaming store, your game store should have received a copy of this from Battlefront Miniatures, and you should be able to flip through it. But basically, Das Book is everything that you really need to know about the game. You don't need to carry your heavy rule book. You don't need to have all those other army books with you, or like the little, you know, intelligence reports they release, or any of that kind of stuff. This has everything in it that you really need. It covers mission rules, it covers the missions, it has, you know, how to do amphibious assaults, and the bocage, and fortifications, and it covers, like, late war airborne assault, and just all sorts of stuff. It's really interesting, it's very helpful. I think it's roughly the same physical size of the mini rulebook, and I'm not sure what the price point is right now. I don't believe that it will be very expensive. I do know it's supposed to be coming out, or actually I think it came out on October 30th, so you should be able to purchase it from stores near you. And actually, let me just check to see if I can find a price set. Price point for this online, and sadly I cannot. My apologies for that. But in addition to that, there are some wonderful models that are out for the British. We've had some of them located on our blog, and I believe they have some great token sets coming out for both the Polish and the French. And there are some decals, I believe, for the British that are supposed to be coming out. Everything looks really well made. It's very interesting. Only downside is Battlefront had raised their prices not too long ago. And you will see that reflected in all their product. Otherwise, Early War looks very interesting. It looks like a chance to play with things that you normally wouldn't. I mean, if you're doing a mid-war or even a late war, you're not going to be using Panzer IIs, because they're just not going to do anything. You'll be using, you know, Panzer IIIs or Panzer IVs, and you'll have Tigers appearing and all sorts of stuff. So hopefully this will provide a unique chance to replicate that error of the war and to get your feet wet with it. I'm sure once this is done that they'll think about, if not actually hopefully do, fighting in the Pacific. They have not addressed that, but they have said that they would like to. So I think that is something that would be very interesting to see happen. And once they're done with the early war, I think they will then get around to that. I believe that covers most of the stuff that is going on right now with Flames of War and with War at Sea. And I just happened to check to see what's going on with the national tournament season for Flames of War on their website, and I am not noticing a whole lot, but I do know that Total Con will be happening here in Massachusetts before too long. I believe it's the beginning of next year, and that is usually a qualifier for the nationals. And I'm not actually seeing anything listed on their website, but when we get more information about that, we will share that with you. And I believe that's everything I'm actually going to cover in this episode. I want to thank you for listening. I hope this wasn't too boring for you. I hope you enjoyed hearing me talk about these issues, and I hope you found them, you know, worthy of your time. We will be returning on regular schedule. I don't know what that is just yet, but as soon as I have that information, I will be sharing it with you. As always, I want to just say thank you again, and don't hesitate to give us your feedback. Remember, keep on gaming, and this is Jonathan J. Reinhardt signing out, and I'm going to be leaving you with our traditional exit music. Thanks, and have a great time.